I want you to give a, sort of have a context of these commandments that God is giving us, particularly the first one, because the first commandment is, you shall have no other gods before me. This is given in a context where people had come from monotheism to henotheism to polytheism. By monotheism, we believe the belief that there's only one true God in the universe. And of course, that's how we started off. Adam and Eve knew there's only one God. And that message got on, but as the world began to be populated, pretty soon we went to henotheism, where people believed there was a God for each people group. And you have this a lot in the Old Testament. And if one nation went to war against another nation, it really was your God fighting their God. And if you fought another nation and you lost, then you had to worship the God of that country. Because that God was stronger, and now you worship that God. And so one of the problems when God's people intermarried with other people who had other beliefs, those people brought their gods with them. Pretty soon you started worshiping all these gods in your house. So imagine King Solomon with all his wives, and they all bring their own God with them, from their own people. And King Solomon had all these gods to worship. You got a problem after a while. You're so busy praying all day, you don't have time to work. But this is the problem that the world experienced, from monotheism to henotheism to polytheism. And particularly in polytheism today, even in Jesus' day, the Greeks had already determined there were 30,000 gods in the sky. Well, in India, they now say there's over 330 million gods. So we live in a world where they believe in many gods. And so it is in that context that God speaks into our lives and says, you shall have no other gods before me. But why this commandment? I mean, is God insecure? Does he have a fragile ego? Does God not like rivalry? Will some of the other gods make him look bad? Is he afraid of competition? Why is God so adamant, no other gods? Well, let me give you three reasons. First of all, because of the nature of God. Secondly, because of the nature of man. And thirdly, because of the nature of idolatry. Let's begin with the first point. Because of the nature of God. The God who is the creator of the universe is an exclusive God. God has what philosophers call self-existence. He caused his own existence. And I even hate to use that term because he didn't really cause himself. He already was. He just always was. From everlasting to everlasting, the psalmist said, you are God. Now, we don't believe that something can come out of nothing. I mean, if there's nothing in my bank account, I can't make something out of nothing. Folk, it stays nothing. You have to have something for a cause. And we believe in a cause and effect sequence. The reason I drive my Montana is somebody made it. Somewhere we got resources, something comes out of something. But when it comes to God, it's not that we say, well, he came out of nothing. No, he didn't come out of nothing. He always existed. But it's hard for us to grasp. Don't try to dwell on it too long or you might end up somewhere else. Just believe God is. He is self-existent, always has been, always will be. From everlasting to everlasting. Which is why God said to Moses, when Moses said, who are you? God said, I am that I am. You can go as far back in history as you can possibly go, and I am. I am self-existent. God exists because he exists. And because of that, God has what we would call intrinsic worth or value. Now, we would say we all have value. We're all worth something. And that's true. But our value is derived. The reason I am valuable, the reason you are valuable, is because God has conferred value on you. You are valuable because you are in his image. He conferred his worth upon you. But when we sang here, who's worthy? Only one. We didn't sing, "You're worthy, you're worthy, you're worthy." No. Only He is worthy because of intrinsic worth. His self-existence. He is an exclusive God. In a culture that is inclusive, God says, I am an exclusive God. There are no other gods before me, period. Because He is inherently worthy of all our worship and praise, there are things about Him that can happen to Him that aren't supposed to happen to us. For example, jealousy is a sin. I'm not supposed to be jealous. It's okay for God to be jealous. In fact, God says, "I am a jealous God. I want all of your worship." Why? Because He is inherently worthy. He deserves it. I am not inherently worthy of driving a heavy Chevy. I would like to be. I'd say, "I need it. Okay, come on, somebody, buy me a new truck. I'm worthy." No, I am not. If you choose, I'll thank you. But it's only by your grace, not because I am worthy. I'll even take the Dodge if I have to. Anything. Be fine. Thank you. I am jealous because I want something that will make me feel good. I'll enjoy, but when you get fixated on it, it becomes sin because you are not worthy. It's not worth all your time and your effort. Think about it. You're not worthy. He is. God is jealous for our worship because He's the source of everything. So yeah. Yeah, He deserves everything. Our worship, our praise, our devotion. For us, it's wrong to be jealous. For us, it's wrong to have pride. Pride is a very basic fundamental sin. It's not wrong for God to have pride. Because of His intrinsic worth, He is worthy to get all the attention, all the honor, all the glory. That's what we have in Revelation 5. When all the beings bowed down and said, "You are worthy to receive honor and glory and power because You created all things." And then later on again in Revelation 5, "You are worthy, O Lamb, because by Your blood You ransomed the people." So God is jealous of our worship, our attention, our focus, our hearts and lives. Because He's the source of it all. He deserves it. He's the only true God. He's the source of it all. He's the cause of it all. He's the owner of it all. He's the purpose of it all. He's the end of it all. In fact, in 1 Corinthians chapter 4, verse 7, here's what Paul says. "What do you have you did not receive? And if you did receive it, why do you boast as though you did not?" We're not worthy to get any kind of accolades or worship or anything because what we have is only given to us. "Look what I did." And God says, "Yeah, but who gave you the energy? Who gave you the health? Who created the resources so you could make something? It's not about you. What you have, you received." Only He is worthy. You can have no other gods. There is only one. So it is in the nature of God that He gets all our worship, all our attention, because He is the only one true God. Intrinsic. Worthy of all our worship. And so God gave us His commandment because of His nature. He is the only true God. Secondly, because of the nature of man. Man likes to design and control his own God in keeping with his desires. God knew that, so He gave us His commandment. He says, "Be careful. Be careful what you design for yourselves because it will be flawed, because you are flawed." Let me give you an example. Julian Huxley. He was a British evolutionary biologist. He was born in the middle 1800s. He was a humanist, an evolutionist, the first director of UNESCO. He's a founding member of the World Wildlife Fund. And here's what Julian Huxley said in an amazing statement. Quote, "The reason we accepted Darwinism without a lot of proof is because we did not want God to interfere with our sexual morals." Isn't that interesting? One of the reasons why we want evolution is because we don't want a God messing up with our lives. We will develop our own values, thank you very much. Don't tell me what's right and wrong. Don't tell me what's sinful and isn't. Good night, nurse. That's the minds of people. We don't want a divine God with divine standards that wants all our heart and our devotion. We're not interested. And the Israelites always struggled with that. In fact, at one point in Habakkuk chapter 1, verse 15 and 16, God says, you know, I watch you, and here's how ridiculous it is. You go out there and you drag your nets out, and you bring all these fish in, then you bow down to your nets. And you thank your nets for what they've done. Do you know how foolish that is? You know how foolish it is to design your own God, come up with your own concept of God, then you worship it. It's foolish. It falls so far short of who the real God is. But it is in the nature of man to rebel and to have our own designer God. Someone that's palatable with our values. That lets me do what I would like to do. Oh, my God would never send anybody to hell. Oh, my God wouldn't do this and my God wouldn't do that. And so we've totally lost sight of the holiness of God. His exclusivity of God. So because of the nature of God, because of the nature of man, and thirdly because of the nature of idolatry, we have this commandment. Because idols ensnare people. There is no such thing as a God that does not demand sacrifice. When the Israelites bow down to Baal, when they bow down to Molech, when they bow down to the Asherah, when they bow down to Isis, when they bow down to Astarte, when they bow down to all these different gods, were they free? Did they have a happy, free life? No, they became ensnared. And pretty soon they're sacrificing their children to fire. They're doing all kinds of crazy things because they became ensnared by idolatry. You worship money, it'll ensnare you. Worshipping money doesn't free you. It makes you a slave to it. So God says, I don't want you to be enslaved to all these man-made gods. I want your heart to be free. And the way to do that is to look to the one true God and let your heart be free from all the gods of this world. In Exodus chapter 20, verse 3, where it says, you shall have no other gods before me. This is how it reads in the original Hebrew. I will transliterate it for you. There shall not be to you other gods over against my face. That's how it literally reads in the Hebrew. There shall not be to you other gods over against my face. In other words, it is obnoxious to God to see his people worshipping other gods before his face. He said, here I am, I'm your God. I brought you to myself. I brought you out of Egypt. I did all these things for you. I made you my people. I made you to have fellowship with me. And then right in front of my face, you turn down and begin to worship idols and other gods. He says, right in front of my face. It's like when you, if you would be unfaithful to your partner, in front of your partner, in front of their face. God says, right here, in front of my face, you're worshiping other gods. Wow. Begin to sense how God must feel about something like that. Oh, we were made for worship. Every man must have a God. Because every one of us, it's like we have a shrine or a heart. We all have a desire to give our allegiance to something or to someone. And if people will reject the one true God, they will invent another God. They will find another purpose for living. They will find another source of meaning. Because we all have a spiritual center. We all want to live for something. We all want to have something that will keep us going. What are some of our substitutes? Let's look at our substitutes for a few moments. How about addictions? Going for a fix. There's all kinds of statistics I could give you. Let me just give you one. The city of Dayton, Ohio. In Dayton, Ohio, the Chamber of Commerce did a study to see how people spent their money. And they discovered that as a collective group of people, when they saw how much money was spent in the city, they discovered that the people in Dayton, Ohio, spent $113,000 a week more on alcohol than groceries. We live for a fix. We have made addictions our God. We will, for the government will even provide centers for you to have a clean fix. We'll supply you clean needles so you can worship the God of gods and have a fix. Addictions have become a huge god in our culture. How about sex and pornography? Oh, so that hasn't become a god in our culture, in our TV, in our magazines, wherever you go. And it makes people a slave of lust. And it has become a god in our culture. We could very easily take all the sexual figurines that we have uncovered through archaeology from 2,000 to 3,000 years ago, we could all haul them to Hollywood and they would fit right in. Lust has become a god. What about money? Didn't Jesus say you can't serve God and mammon, or God and money? And yet, money. People are driven by money. Does it free people or does it ensnare? That it's become a god. Don't you touch my money. You touch my tax, my money for taxes. That's my money. Don't you touch my money for the... Don't you... Don't... Whatever. You know what. How about preoccupations? Some of our preoccupations have become like a god to us. And some of us who love sports have to be very careful here. Because folks, I love my CFL. Yeah. I love my football. And the older I get, the more I love watching CFL football. Man, I love going to church Sunday morning. Have a nice roast beef dinner. Thank you, sweetheart. Lie down, turn on the TV, and watch the Calgary Stampeders whoop the Edmonton Eskimos. Man, that is just, you know what? That is as close to heaven on earth as I can think of. Man. Oh. God forgive you. It is very, you know what, we have made a god out of sports. Sports idols that earn $9, $10, $12 million a year. We want to wear their names on our jerseys. And we want to do all these things. And oh wow, I'll tell you, we worship celebrities. And preoccupations have become a god in our culture, in our lives. How about might? I was very disappointed this morning. Had a few minutes. You hear a little bit of the 9/11 ceremony going on before I came to church. And Vice President Biden, when he was speaking, he praised, he says, the bottom line why we are as great as we are because of the might of the American spirit. And not once did he mention God. Not once. All the credit went to the American spirit. That's wrong. That's worshiping self. By the grace of God, there weren't more people killed. By the grace of God, there haven't been more terrorist attacks. And they cannot credit themselves for the good job we're doing. They're doing what they can, but it's God who protects. and blessing us. But we have a way of worshiping might. The military, strength, power. How about the God of nature, Mother Earth, or the New Age term called Gaia? We have begun to worship the green color. To be environmentally friendly has become a social god in our culture. We are so green friendly, you can't even develop a piece of land because you might kill a mouse. Well, you know, there's a certain species there, so you can't go there. Well, we'd like to, you would disturb the natural habitat. We are so caught up with nature. Nature controls us. God gave us the world for us to be in charge of. And it's like nature is now in charge of us. And nature has become our God. It's like we're worshiping at the shrine of being environmentally friendly. Now, there's nothing wrong with being a good steward of the earth. Absolutely not. And historically, the farmer and the hunter have been the best ecosystems out there, keeping everything in check and in balance. Now, it's the politicians and all the elite that are now in charge of keeping us balanced with nature. But nature has become our God, and it's just, you won't disturb nature. It's like when, last week my wife was in Langley for a week. And every evening we get on the telephone and we talk. Well, as soon as that phone rings and I see the caller ID, and I knew where it was, it's just great, just press that button, hi babe and all that. But how ridiculous would it look when I am done talking with her and I say goodbye, and the moment she says goodbye, I put that phone down on the table and I worship the telephone, say, oh telephone, you just gave me just the love of my life. I thank you for, and the telephone spoke to me, and somehow this telephone is just worthy of all my accolades. Oh, telephone. No, it was just a channel through which my wife spoke to me. Nature is only a channel through which God speaks. We do not worship the earth. It is only a channel through which God blesses us and speaks to us. But He's the one speaking. The heavens declare the glory of God. They aren't the glory of God. They declare the glory of God. Behind that is God Himself, and they point to Him. We don't make earth our God. He is God. Well, in summary, how does this all apply to us nowadays? Well, number one, every person has a God. Every person has a God. I'm going to ask two questions, and by these two questions, we will determine who your God is. Here's the first question. What do you like to think about in your free time? What do you like to think about in your free time? What makes your adrenaline flow? Secondly, here's the next question. Who do you want to be close to and please more than anything else? Who do you want to be close to and to please more than anything else? For some, it could be family is their God. Their boyfriend, girlfriend, or spouse is their God. Whatever. But answer those two questions and you will have just told us who your God is. What do you like to think about? And who do you want to be close to and please more than anything else? Two simple tests to determine who your God is. If I want to love Jesus, when I think about the Lord Jesus Christ, knowing what He's done for me, my desire to be close to Him to please Him, then I know. If that's uppermost in my mind, then I know I don't have other God. Every person has a God. What's yours? Secondly, every God demands allegiance. That's true of the living God. That's true of the false gods. Every single god comes to take over. There is no such thing as a God who says, I would like to participate with you in your process of running your life. No, they just come and take right over. Lust doesn't come into my life and say, could I just dabble with you once in a while? It just wants to take right over. Money wants to take right over. Sports wants to take right over. Whatever it is, it just wants to take over. Every god demands allegiance, wants to control. Thirdly, every domination leads to slavery. That's true of the living God, and that's true of the false God. Paul says we are slaves of Christ. I do everything. I'm your slave. Now, we don't like the word slave. It's not a good term in this, in our culture, in our century. But the question is, who do you want to be sold out to? Who do you want to live for? Do you want to live for the fleshly desires? Or do you want to live for the purposes of God, the person of God? Newspaper editor asked his reporters to rewrite the Ten Commandments, thinking that in a couple of weeks, as the reporter had time, he would come and have a new version of the Ten Commandments. Well, within minutes, the reporter was back. Big piece of paper, one word scrawled on it. And that one word was his summary of the Ten Commandments. It was the word, don't. There it is. What are the Ten Commandments about? Don't. Oh, don't have too much fun. No, cut that out. Don't laugh. Don't have fun. Don't enjoy yourself. And they see the Ten Commandments as a list of don'ts. I need to remind all of us the purpose of the commands, and in Deuteronomy is a recap. Moses recaps before he dies. He recaps for the children of God, children of Israel, what God had done for them. And in Deuteronomy chapter 5, after giving the Ten Commandments, and in verse 29, here's what God says. In the same chapter as the commandments were written there, oh, that their hearts would be inclined to fear me and keep all my commands always. There it is. Keep all my commands always. Why? So that it might go well with them, with their children. So I'm giving you this. It'll be well with you. This is a list of don'ts. It's a list of do's. If we were to rewrite the Ten Commandments into Beatitudes, this is what the Ten Beatitudes would look like. Blessed are they who put God first. Blessed are they who need no substitutes. Blessed are they who honor God's name. Blessed are they who honor God's name. Blessed are they who honor their parents. Blessed are they who value life. Blessed are they who keep their marriage vows. Blessed are they who respect the property of others. Blessed are they who love the truth. And blessed are they who learn the art of contentment. Wait, that's what the Ten Commandments are about. It's the do's. Here's how to live so that you will have life. It will be well with you. That's the whole purpose. That's the whole purpose. So, in closing, two more words. We're done. What's God looking from me in a practical response? Number one, loyalty. Loyalty. A man purchased a statue of Christ at an auction, came home, put it in the living room. The next day, his wife decided that statue belonged in a different part of the house. And as she picked up the statue of Christ to carry it to another part of the house, 5-year-old son saw her moving it, and he blurted out, where are you putting God? And that's a good question. Where are you putting God? Will he be first place in your living room? In your bedroom? In your kitchen? In your dining room? In your family room? In your garage? Will he be first place in everything? Where have you put him? God wants my loyalty. Because he is the one true God who called me, redeemed me through his son. Next to loyalty, I would use the word courage. It takes courage to stand up in a culture that no longer accepts the exclusivity of God. In fact, we have three false gods I didn't mention before. I mentioned preoccupations and addictions. No, I have three more false gods that we worship in our culture. Diversity, tolerance, pluralism. Our culture worships diversity, tolerance, pluralism. Let me give you a good example. At Jack Layton's funeral, we had a reading from Christian scriptures, and we had a reading from the Quran. I mean, hey, diversity, pluralism, tolerance. Another one that jumped out of my mind. Last week, I was having coffee at A&W. Grabbed the paper just to enjoy the coffee and read the paper. There's a picture of the Calgary mayor at the Calgary Gay Pride Parade with this rainbow-colored hat in his hand and a T-shirt with the words straight but not narrow. And what he was saying is, look, I'm not gay. I'm straight. But I'm not narrow. I can be at these things and support and encourage it. I thought, isn't that our culture? Straight but not narrow. And that's what the world looks at when they see us as Christians. Narrow. Intolerant. Bigoted. Conceited. What makes you think you have the only truth? As if there are many truths. Diversity, tolerance, pluralism. Because supposedly we are too narrow. Are the Ten Commandments narrow? Yeah. Yeah, they're pretty straightforward. They're pretty narrow. But let me celebrate the narrowness of the Ten Commandments this way. No passenger wants to be on a plane where the pilot decides to miss the narrow runway and land somewhere else. My wife just flew home yesterday from Abbotsford. She was with a friend over there for a week. Just flew in. Can you imagine what would have gone through her mind as the plane is coming into Calgary and suddenly over the intercom, the pilot says, well, you know, this is Captain so-and-so, whatever, and we just like to inform you that I'm bored of always landing on a narrow, you know, runway at the Calgary Airport. We're going to try landing on Deerfoot Trail today, if you folks don't mind. Or if there's not too much traffic, we'll try McKnight Boulevard. And we notice that there's a lot of farmers' fields around us, and you know what? I don't know. It might be exciting and mind-expanding if we just decided to land on a canola field. Folks, when you are on that airplane, you hope that pilot is narrow-minded and says, I will only land on that narrow piece of pavement. Because on that narrow piece of pavement is my road to happiness and safety. And folks, those are the Ten Commandments that give you a safe place to land and to live so that it may be well with you. Who is your God? The Bible says, I am the Lord your God who brought you out of Egypt, out of the land of slavery. You shall have the one.